Well, it's Tuesday. When you hear that song at 5 p.m. on Joy 620, that means Andrew's in the office. So Hope Resource Center is here, and I'm the executive director of Hope Resource Center. And every Tuesday we come in and we talk about life. We talk about the issues of the day. And I try not to get too political on this show. You know, sometimes we do that when we bring in state representatives and different things. But what we're going to do today is a little bit different. We are going to, of course, talk about the Supreme Court decision that was made yesterday. We're going to do that in the second segment. But the first segment and then the third segment, we're going to talk with a friend of mine. His name is Mark. And Mark works with the National Embryo Donation Center here in Knoxville. And that might be the first time you've ever heard that name. It's also known as NEDC. But what we're going to do today is, because I want this show every Tuesday to look at the pro-life movement as a whole. So that includes Hope Resource Center. That includes other factions, you know, Tennessee Right to Life, National Right to Life. But it also includes embryo donation and adoption. And I think some of you may be hearing that and going, well, I'm not real sure what that is. Well, that is why I have Mark in here today to talk to you about that. So, Mark, introduce yourself and kind of give us a quick rundown, then I'll ask you some questions about what's going on.
Well, sure, Andrew. Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. My name's Mark Mellinger. I'm the Marketing and Development Director for the National Embryo Donation Center here in Knoxville. We're actually on Kingston Pike out in the Farragut area. A lot of people have probably driven right past us and never knew that we were here. So, you know, the question would be, why does a group like this exist? And it's really simple. With the advent of in vitro fertilization, a lot of couples will do IVF, shorthand for in vitro, and then they will have embryos left over. I mean, let's say they go through a couple of cycles of IVF. They have a couple of children. But often, fertility doctors will help them produce so many embryos, it could be 10, 15, 20, and that they have some left over. We prefer to use the term remaining, but people would, sure, would say left over as well. So the question is, what do you do then? What do you do? Let's say you have 5, 10 embryos left over, sometimes more, sometimes fewer. What do you do with them? Well, okay, basically you have four options. You can either discard them, which is a pleasant way of saying destroy them. Mm-hmm. So you can do that. We don't think that that's a good option. You can donate them to embryonic stem cell research, which we don't think is a good option because that also destroys them. You can choose to continue to keep them in a fertility clinic's freezer, which is just delaying and postponing a decision. And we really think that eventually down the line, if they're just left in the freezer, they're probably going to be destroyed then as well. And I should say, the reason this is so important is because these are human lives. I mean, we believe, you and I believe, sure, and believers know that life begins at conception. And this is what this is. These embryos are the tiniest stage of human life, fertilized eggs. So it's a big deal what happens to them. And we believe the fourth option that I'm going to describe for you is really the only option, because this is what we do. What we do is we say, hey, if you have embryos that are remaining from IVF, we will take them. We will take them from all over the country, and we'll take them free of charge. So people who've gone through IVF and have remaining embryos and have that dilemma of not knowing what to do, okay, you have a place where you can send them to. You won't pay those fertility clinic charges, hundreds of dollars a year anymore. We'll accept them. We'll store them here at our lab right on Kingston Pike in Knoxville. And then we will adopt them out to families looking to have children.
Yeah, and you know, it's an amazing, because when I first met you, And was kind of looking into all this, I mean, even for someone like me who kind of lives and breathes the pro-life, right, movement, it was all new to me. But what it does is it makes us truly look, and this is what I talked about last week on the show, was how do we define our pro-lifeness? Mm-hmm. So are we fully pro-life? Or is there some kind of middle ground where we have exceptions and, well, you know, here it's life, but, you know, these embryos are not inside, mm-hmm, of anybody, so that's not life. And so what I like about what y'all do is it's a process of saying, no, we're fully pro-life, and these are these are babies
mm-hmm.
at the earliest stage.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no difference. You know, it's after conception. Even if it was inside the womb, it is a baby. We believe that. We believe life begins at conception. So, and I think it's awesome that you know, some people would say, well, I can't afford to donate the, well, it doesn't cost them anything donate them. So yes, you can.
You can afford this. Yes, you can afford it.
You know, free is affordable. I think we believe and agree with that. So y'all have been open since 2003.
Yeah.
And a number that I found today, which I thought was interesting, was there's estimated over 625,000 mm-hmm. human embryos currently mm-hmm. in the U.S.
That's the enormity of this, the sheer scale of it, is shocking to people. I mean, they can't believe that there are, and that number, which is on our website and it's used by a lot of other outlets, we think that may even be outdated. Now, you may have close to a million embryos, a million human beings who are literally frozen in place right now. It's a staggering thing to think about. So that's why we're here. We want to give them the best chance at full life outside the
sure.
womb. That's why the NEDC, National Embryo Donation Center, is here.
You know, and I think it's amazing. You know, I've heard numbers before where people say, well, there's 350,000 kids in foster or in the state system right now.
Yeah.
There's a million abortions roughly a year in America, you know, give or take, you know, a few. There's 40 million abortions every single year in the country, 40 to 50 million. And now we throw this number in there, 625 to who knows, could be up uh-huh. to a million frozen embryos that are just sitting there. And so and what I know, I mean, not just from personal experience and friendships, I know there's so many folks that are not able to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're thinking, well, I don't know about adoption or cost or this or that option. But the truth here, what we know is there are options for you. And this is one of those options.
It well, and absolutely, and I know you would be, and we are as well. We're all of the above people when it comes to adoption. I mean, I think foster adoption
sure, sure.
is great. I think traditional domestic adoption is great, and international adoption. Hey, they're all needed. One isn't better than another. But Andrew, you made the point that embryo adoption mm-hmm. is really the one option that the church, I think because the technology is so new, because IVF is still a relatively
right.
new phenomenon, the church is not as awake to this and alert to it as it is the other forms of adoption. I think it is a compelling option because it, first of all, it gives the woman the chance to be pregnant with her adopted child.
Sure.
If you're a woman who wants to experience pregnancy, that is not going to happen through any other form of adoption.
Right.
Right. So you build that bond with your baby. A lot of mothers want to feel that. The other thing is, it's actually a pretty affordable option. I mean, once all the costs are involved, and you go through a frozen embryo transfer, that's what we call it, an FET, a transfer, the cost for the first one is going to be probably just a little bit under $10,000. That is cheaper than most forms of domestic adoption, with the exception of foster care, which is always going to be the most affordable. And it's certainly a lot
sure.
cheaper than international adoption. So that's why we're here to tell you that this is a chance to carry your adopted child, to be pregnant for women who thought they probably would never get pregnant if you're having fertility problems. And it's an affordable option. Is it foolproof? Is it fail-safe? No, but none of the adoption
sure.
options are. Our rate of success when it comes to births this past year was 54%. So that means over half the people who came to have embryo transfers with us at the NEDC did end up giving birth and have children in their home now.
Yeah, and we're gonna share some stories here,
yeah.
here in a little while and talk about. I just think you posted a picture today or yesterday of,
mm-hmm.
of a family, and I just think, man, how awesome is it that it goes from a frozen embryo to seeing this child in front of you? It's just really cool stuff. So been open since 2003. I think your website says 1,000 embryo transfers since 2003.
About, yes.
Is that a roundabout number? So how can people find find y'all online and find out more about you. And this isn't just Knoxville. This is nationwide and in some parts of Canada, too.
That's right. We have done transfers with people from all 50 states and from Canada, as you mentioned. So the best way to learn about us is to go to our website. It's really easy to remember, embryodonation.org. Embryodonation.org. We have FAQs on donation. If you want to donate embryos that you have left over from IVF, we have questions on adoption there. And you know what? You can actually start the process there. You can start the application to donate or the application to adopt right there on the website. We've made it pretty comprehensive. So and you know, you can obviously call us if you have questions. Sure. Once you've gone over the website. But that's the best thing to do. And yeah, we're bad and we're nationwide. It's good stuff.
And that's the awesome thing, is
it's right here in Knoxville.
It's here in Knoxville, but they're impacting families all over the country. And so if you want to be a part of that as well, maybe you have, you know, 10 kids of your own and you're sitting at home and you're going, man, I want to see more families have kids. And maybe you want to donate funds to help this organization get the word out. Then how would they go about doing that? How would they contact you, Mark, and kind of start that process of being not just an embryo donor, but a financial donor to help and stand with y'all?
Well, we are a nonprofit ministry.
Yeah. We know about that.
you know all about that. And I, you know, I know it seems like nonprofit ministries are always asking for money. There's a reason for that.
Sure.
It's because we need to keep the lights on, too. And so the best way to do that is to go to embryodonation.org. There is a panel on the left side of the page where you'll see a tab that says Support the NEDC. Super easy to support the NEDC. You can go there and you can make a contribution as little as $5 a month, as much as $5,000.
Yeah, well, or a million, right?
Somebody out there has $1 million.
That's true. Somebody does.
Wow, I would love it.
They may be running for president. Who knows? They have somebody out there has $1 million. And so so we're so thankful for what y'all are doing. We're going to talk more about Hope and about NEDC when we come back. And also, when we come back after the break, we're going to dive in quickly and briefly, as much as we can, on the Supreme Court decision from yesterday that I disagree with completely. We'll be back in a sec. Doesn't get much better than that.
You said you wanted some Southern Rock, and
that's
you got
right.
Some Skinner.
Got some Skinner. Simple kind of man. Man, that's good stuff. That's some good. I was about to say something I shouldn't say. That's really good though. Skinner is great. So we're glad to come back. That's a little bit different than David Crowder or the Gaithers.
Crowder's
but
good,
but it's certainly Skinner is amazing. So I've actually was playing that on the way in here. So that's great. We're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Joined today by a friend of mine with the National Embryonic Donation Center, and we're talking about the pro-life movement as a whole, and so part of that does certainly include the legislative side of it. And so yesterday, a law was being looked at in the Supreme Court, legislation that was passed in Texas, and the Supreme Court made a ruling, and the ruling didn't go our way, I guess you could say. So for pro-lifers, it certainly didn't go our way. So the Supreme Court of the United States ruled on a Texas law that was passed in 2013. You can Google it. You can find the law and see what the law actually entailed. But the court ruling mainly dealt with admitting privileges of abortion doctors and the hospital-like standards that these facilities should be required to meet. Abortion activists attacked this law as intrusive and overreaching. This is ironic, as the very service, abortion, which they promote, is also intrusive and overreaching. But I digress. These same activists, in almost every case, call for government intervention in the environment, in our homes, in our cars, in our churches, in our bathrooms. Yet we shouldn't dare seek for government regulation in the womb or in the abortion clinic. This ruling today is one of the most influential rulings on abortion in quite some time. This Texas law was setting the stage for future states to go down the same path. This law was designed to finally achieve the regulation of abortions and the clinics that provide them that many deemed necessary. The ruling will certainly act as a large hiccup for the future of abortion regulation. I have read through the opinion of the court and the dissent. I'm always interested to see how the court came to its conclusion. I would encourage you to do that. It's over 100 pages, and I know that sounds like a lot, but it's worth your time. The opinion, written by Justice Breyer, details the ruling with great care, but without care. Now, let me explain that. The five justices that ruled against Texas in this case have gone against the argument of the day from many that claim to be progressive and pro-choice. Their default argument is always, if it can save one life, and then it goes on from there. This is what we hear concerning gun control, climate change, public transportation, and any other regulation. We are always lectured on the same point. But if it can save one life, then we should do it. So why not use that argument here? They don't use that here because it hurts their narrative. Justice Breyer, in the ruling, you can go read that online as well, pontificated as she cited the district court's ruling. The great weight of evidence demonstrates that before the act's passage, abortion in Texas was extremely safe, with particularly low rates of serious complications and virtually no deaths occurring on account of the procedure. The court ruled based on the argument of, thus, there were no significant health-related problems that the new law helped to cure. This is in direct opposition to the progressive stance mentioned earlier. Virtually no deaths does not translate to no deaths. Particularly low rates of serious complication does not translate to no serious complications. Yet, this is their stance. The fight here is not about safety or women's health. The fight against this Texas law is based on convenience. Abortion should be convenient and readily available. We shouldn't get lost in the minutiae of the safety debate. The point here is a clear one. Abortion on demand for any reason is the desired outcome. Standards and regulations will only get in the way of the profits that can be made by these abortion clinics and their doctors. Now, I could go on about this ruling, but I'll just let Justice Thomas do that below. One may read this and find themselves hopeless. I was almost there until I read the dissenting argument from the justices that disagreed with the court's ruling today, and this gave me hope. Justice Thomas wrote his own opinion and articulated his stance well. He argued against the ability that the court has allowed for third parties to bring cases on the basis of another's constitutional right. Justice Thomas put it this way: this suit is possible only because the court has allowed abortion clinics and physicians to invoke a putative constitutional right that does not belong to them, a woman's right to abortion. Here they are assuming the constitutional right for another. The court in the past has not made this a habit, but Justice Thomas points out that this trend continues when a particular case or topic is brought before the courts, and that particular topic is abortion. Justice Thomas does an amazing job at pointing out the fallacy that is this ruling. The case hinged on hypotheticals. If this law is allowed, then these people will face obstacles to obtain abortion. The people described here are not real witnesses. They are, again, hypotheticals. This is Justice Thomas's main point. The court is allowing for third parties, abortion clinics and doctors, to argue for the right of another, even if that other is a simple hypothetical person that may or may not face obstruction in seeking an abortion. And then I love what Justice Thomas said here. He said, 80 years on the court has come full circle. The court has simultaneously transformed judicially created rights like the right to abortion into preferred constitutional rights, while disfavoring many of the rights actually enumerated in the Constitution. But our Constitution renounces the notion that some constitutional rights are more equal than others. A plaintiff either possesses the constitutional right he is asserting or not. And if not, the judiciary has no business creating ad hoc exceptions so that others can assert rights that seem especially important to vindicate. Now, I could continue on and on talking about this, but what I want you to do is understand that the sun came up this morning, right? So this decision was made yesterday. The sun came up this morning. We're still here, and we're still ready to stand for life. So it's not time to pout. It's not time to just stay in our houses. It is time to stand for life. We don't embrace defeat. We continue to get up and seek to see lives impacted around us. That's what we're doing at Hope. That's what Mark is doing in their work. We continue to serve this community and be here for the men and women in crisis. And we will continue to, at Hope, we'll continue to offer our services at no charge to our patients. We do this because we love our neighbor and seek to show them they are valued. So the work that we do will be scoffed at and will be mocked. But what I want you to know is while they're putting all their resources in getting more and more abortions available to the public, Hope is preparing to throw 17 baby showers this week. So I ask you, who's using the resources better? I think it's a simple answer. So we do thank you for standing with us. So Mark.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
As we think about the decision that was made yesterday and the decision to regulate clinics, that's really Mm-hmm. Regardless, you know, even if we want to put our, and it's hard to divorce yourself from your opinions, but if we want to put that to the side and our ideals and our values and all that, which is insane that anyone ever would ask you to do that. But right. But if we did, I have a daughter, I have two daughters, and I have a wife, and I have a mom. And if they are going to get a surgical procedure anywhere, regardless of what type of procedure, I kind of want the place that they're going to be regulated. And I'm not a big government guy. But I do want them to meet certain standards so that I know that my baby, my wife, my mom is being taken care of.
And that was all that this law in Texas sought to basically ensure, was that these clinics would have to meet certain, I believe it was ambulatory surgical
sure.
standards, mm-hmm. and that's a very reasonable standard. Also, that the physicians who are in charge of these clinics, who are performing the procedures, were, I believe, within had admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the facility. Those don't sound like unreasonable restrictions. I think your thoughts were very good on this, and I liked what Justice Thomas said.
He's pretty good.
He's all right. I think he'll do all right.
Yeah.
I liked what Justice Alito said, too. He said, you know, there, it seems like they're in, I'm not pouting, but I think it is a point worth making that Justice Alito also said there seems to be one set of standards with regard to this particular issue, and you made the very same point. The considerations that most of the court and the justices seem to take into account for other issues don't hold water on this one, and that's telling.
And it's just been frustrating for me. It's frustrating for me because we know when life begins.
Right.
And where did their life begin? At conception.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that walks.
Everybody was an embryo.
We're inside of a womb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, and we're giving an opportunity at life. Now, some of them were giving amazing opportunities. Some of them were born into very terrible circumstances. Some of them were born into very amazing circumstances. Some of them were born into middle-class circumstances that were okay, but not amazing, but not bad either.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, everyone was given that opportunity. The justices that voted against this, and just so you know, a lot of people were saying, well, this is why we got to get the right president in there to get our Supreme Court justices. It went 5-3. Scalia dying didn't change this. And that's the part that's scary. Had Scalia been alive, it would have been 5-4.
Yes, and we still would have lost.
I mean, and we've seen this over and over with Kennedy.
It's Kennedy. The swing vote, right?
He's the one that's kind of like, yeah, who knows? Maybe I'm conservative, maybe I'm not. We'll just kind of see what happens. And so what we have to do is, this doesn't change what we're doing. And what we're doing is we're trying to get the narrative and the messaging out there that life begins at conception. Life has value.
Mm-hmm.
Either it has value at every stage, or it doesn't have value at all.
Mm. You preach it, and I'll turn the pages. Does that music mean we have to go to a commercial?
Yeah, we're going to a commercial break, and we'll be back. We'll finish up on this topic on the other side of the break, and then we're going to share some stories with you from Hope and from NEDC as we talk about what this truly does for the makeup of our society as life is celebrated. We'll be back in a sec.
There you go.
We can talk about angels on Joy 620, right?
Absolutely we can.
Yeah, that was your pick, Mark.
That was. Yeah. We're both going Southern Rock today.
That's
you did
good.
Zeppelin, I did the Black Crows.
Yeah, so. That's good. We're back. This is Andrew Wood, joined by Mark.
Skinner,
and
you didn't do Zeppelin.
Skinner, yeah.
What am I talking
Skinner,
about?
Yeah, not Zeppelin. And you know, we ended the last segment by talking about the Supreme Court ruling yesterday that really was probably the most I guess the biggest ruling, the most impactful ruling since 92, which was Casey versus Planned Parenthood, and kind of when the undue burden language came into play. And so that is kind of the language they tried to use yesterday, was this creates an undue burden. Again, these are hypotheticals, though. And it's interesting as we walk through this. If you look in the state of California right now is requiring by law that places like Hope in the state of California would have to promote abortion providers, would have to have things on their wall, flyers on their wall about abortions and all these things. So it's okay to overstep and overreach inside of a pregnancy center that isn't, that really isn't doing any surgical procedures. They're doing ultrasounds and things like that, but they're not, nothing's invasive. They're not hurting people.
Right.
They're not doing surgery or anything like that. And so it's okay when you overreach and put in and get into there, but it's not when you, when you require abortion clinics to meet certain set of standards. And this all came from the Gosnell clinic in Philadelphia. And just Google that and prepare yourself for what you're going to find.
I think it just shows that this, this is ideologically driven. This is not viewed in the same light as other issues. Again, this is a, this is a set aside. You said it so well. Okay, you and I both have daughters and we have wives. I would never ever want my daughter to make the choice for an abortion. But let's say that she did, with or without my permission, or whomever. It is reasonable to ask that the clinic be safe. Now, you and I were talking off mic before we started, and is part of the motivation of a law like this to close down abortion clinics because they can't meet the health regulations? Yeah, we're going to be upfront about that, but it doesn't mean that the point is invalid, that we are also for the women who go to these places that if they're going to do that terrible procedure, they need to at least look out for themselves.
Well, if somebody is going to do surgery on your knee, I want to make sure they're meeting certain standards and regulations. If they're pulling your wisdom teeth, I want to make sure they meet certain standards and regulations. If they're doing a tonsillectomy, just name the procedure. I want to make sure they're meeting certain standards and procedures. And there's nothing wrong with that. We want those things. So why do we not want those same things? Well, it's because we wrap this up in women's health. And we could go on and on about this, and I'm not going to. I will at some point, but I'm not going
to. You're done.
And so the main thing is stand for life, celebrate life, and just keep doing what you're doing in your community. And as long as you're doing that and having those conversations and prepare to do that, to prepare to love your neighbor, then you're going to be okay. Regardless of what the courts decide or politicians decide, you love your neighbor. And that's going to drive a lot of what we do. So what I wanted to do with this third segment, Mark, is kind of share stories. So I talked that this week at Hope, we're preparing for baby showers. It's one of the greatest things that I think we do. As these moms have gone through parenting class, a 10-week process, they've been mentored, and they're doing all these things. We're going to throw them baby showers. They're going to get amazing stuff.
Awesome. Love it.
All brand-new stuff. And some of these folks, this will be the only baby shower they get.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these folks will be coming to their baby shower without anyone else. They don't have a boyfriend or husband or a significant other coming with them. They don't have a mom. They don't have a dad coming with them. They don't have any family members coming with them. That's not every case, but sometimes that is the case. And so it breaks my heart to know that had we not been there, they wouldn't get a baby shower. Mm. And so that's what we're doing. I want to hear a story from you because, like I said, you know, one thing that interested me about what y'all do is these embryos could be frozen for years.
We believe it is infinitely.
So the amazing thing about that is the embryo could be, let's say, 6 years old, and then you have a baby.
Yes.
That's amazing to me. But tell some stories about what it's been like for you to kind of see these families and the impact that this has had on their lives.
Well, to your point, I'll just follow up on what you just said. In I believe a couple of months, we are going to be transferring a 20-year-old embryo. And you know, if the embryo comes to birth, that would be the oldest embryo that the NEDC has ever successfully transferred. But we have had many that are in that neighborhood that have been successful transfers. We just had a family in our office last week that has had two transfers with us. They had twin boys, and then they had a daughter with us a couple years later. Those boys were in frozen, and I believe the boys are six now. They were in frozen preservation for 14 years.
Wow.
So let's see, they're four now. So they were conceived in 1998. You know,
that's
about
amazing.
The girl, the daughter was 16 years. It blows your mind to think golly, you know, when I was still in college, these kids who are just little kids now were conceived, but they can be frozen apparently indefinitely, and God cares about those little lives so much that they still retain all their humanness, all their viability. It is an amazing thing to think about.
Well, think about the stories that these kids are going to be able to tell one day.
Well, it's fascinating.
That they were picked. I mean, it's just, it's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing.
It's a microcosm of, and all adoption is like
sure.
this. But it is you know, the gospel in miniature. Just as God chooses you and me. You know, I know I sure was not smart enough and definitely wasn't good enough to choose him.
Absolutely.
He has his hand on me, or otherwise, you know, I'm eternally going to be separated from him. It's same with this. What a great story that first of all, your birth parents loved you, if that's what you want to call the genetic parents, loved you enough to make sure that your life wasn't snuffed out, that you
sure.
were frozen and you had a chance at life outside the womb with another family. And then this other family that actually is your family for the rest of your life, they loved you enough to choose you. I think it's the gospel in miniature. It's what Christ does for us, you know?
I think about when, you know, my son, he makes up, maybe he's not making it up. He told me the other day that he was an adult in the 1930s and went on about dinosaurs. So apparently dinosaurs were in the 1930s, all kinds of just stuff that doesn't make any sense, but it completely made sense to him. And so I think about the stories that he makes up, but these kids are going to be able to grow up and say, I was frozen for 14 years.
Yes.
And a family chose me. I mean, and then I was able to, I mean, if that doesn't point you to the importance and the value of life, and what we are able now, you know, this isn't the 1930s. This isn't where we didn't have the technology, we didn't have the ability, you know, we didn't have ultrasound, we didn't have these things. No, think about where our technology and science is, that even in the 90s, we were able to freeze these mm-hmm. embryos mm-hmm. and keep them and take care of them and then be able to implant them. And now they are now part of a family. I mean, it just is amazing to me. And what we also see here is a ton of diversity.
Yeah.
And different races coming together.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just is a such a beautiful picture of why life has value. And if, again, it also makes our argument, kind of makes it even easier for us. If we can say, well, if you don't believe life begins at conception, let me take you down and let me go introduce you to this family that was able to take this 14-year-old embryo mm-hmm. and now has a child.
Amen.
I mean, that kind of is the, now tell me again that life doesn't begin at conception?
We have, I would say, 600 exhibits, because we're at almost 600 babies born through our program. That's, you know, easily the most of any embryo adoption entity in the world. So we have about 600 exhibits that would tell you, you know, okay, this was a young person who was frozen, and look at this teenager now. Look at this 8 or 9 year old now. Look at these, you know, these 6 year old boys I was talking about who were in the office last week. You know, they have genetic siblings. You know, not in their current family, but they have genetic siblings who are now 18 or 19 years old. They were all conceived at the same time. Okay. So tell me that's not life. I mean, their humanity is maintained even after being frozen for a decade plus.
That's what I don't understand. You know, we have, you know, this particular election, we've had some candidates during the primary that articulated the pro-life stance amazingly. I mean, it's
yes.
just, I've been really impressed with a few and the way they articulated their pro-life stance. But I'm thinking if I'm running and my argument is life begins at conception, and then I'm hit back with a reporter or with the other side, and they're saying, well, no, it doesn't. Science doesn't prove that. I would say, well, Mr. Journalist, and you know this, mm-hmm. being a journalist, won't you drive with me down to Knoxville? And let me walk you through this. I want you to meet a family. I want you to talk to these families that were unable to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because of science that you celebrate, and because of technology, and because of our author, our Lord, that mm-hmm. creates life, this embryo, 14-year-old,
mm-hmm.
can now be...
Is a baby.
I mean, to me, that is just... well, I mean, what are they going to say to that? How can you then turn around and say it's not life? Well, no. I mean, had we not saved that embryo, this family wouldn't have been complete.
Absolutely.
But because we saved it, this family is complete.
I just don't see how you can just say it's genetic material of some sort. You know, you drew that line of thinking out to its logical conclusion earlier. If that is your argument, that this is some sort of substance with mm-hmm. the possibility of becoming human, all right, you tell me where that line is. You tell me where that line is when they cross the threshold and become human. I would much rather err on the side of, gee whiz, if and especially, you know, if, when you take into account of Psalm 139, I mean, the Bible makes clear as believers, life begins at conception. I mean, you know, that's when David said his life began. He said he was sinful from the time his mother conceived him, and God saw him in the womb there. Yep. So I'd much rather err on that side and be extra cautious than say, oh, the line is somewhere in the first trimester, somewhere in the first 4 or 8 weeks. Boy, I know I'm not wise enough to draw that line.
Well, and to think that embryo, and then it just as a baby, and I went through the different stages last week, but as the baby is growing inside of the womb, and we see it has its own brain, its own Amen. DNA, its own blood type, its own all these things. I mean, it just the argument is over. You know, the argument of if it's life is over. We know the truth. And we'll talk more when we come back. That's good. The music has been stellar today. I'm just going to let you know.
Throws a little curveball.
Dust in the wind.
Going Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I first started in radio, I was 17 years old, and it was a country station in my hometown, 94.3 WJJM. Small station, still open, but, you know, we read obituaries. I mean, it was your classic local radio station. And the great thing about it was we were country, and I love country music. We played country. But when I moved to the lunchtime slot, at lunchtime we played classic rock.
Is that right?
You ran country music up until lunchtime. And then you played classic rock for about 3 hours, and then you went back to country. And it was the oddest thing, but it worked so well. Had we took classic rock off, the town would have lost their mind.
Wow.
And, it was an amazing thing.
Well, there's a lot of crossover between country and rock.
You know, Skinner is, to me, country. You know, there's
a little bit rock.
Marshall Tucker Band, Eagles. They're all kind of in that realm, but... You know,
Johnny Cash was a little bit of both.
And nowadays, I mean, country's pop. So you could play absolutely anything on a country station, apparently. So it's been a fun show today, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell people again how they can find you, and also how they can get in touch with you specifically.
Absolutely. It's the National Embryo Donation Center. The website is the easiest way to find us. It's embryodonation.org, embryodonation.org. And you can call me. My name is Mark Mellinger. I'm the Marketing and Development Director at 865, obviously, is our area code. Then 777-2013, extension 4. Again, that's 777-2013, extension 4. I'd be happy to talk with you.
Yeah, and you know, again, what my goal here is every Tuesday is to kind of open your eyes to the pro-life movement as a whole. We've interviewed people from Texas Right to Life. We've interviewed vice presidents of pregnancy centers out in Arizona and Colorado and different places. And the reason is because I want you to see every facet of what we do in the pro-life movement. And all of these pieces make up the puzzle. And so if we're going to claim to be pro-life, it's okay if you didn't know that Mark's group existed. That's okay. But now you do know. And so what does that mean? And what does that mean for your prayers? What does that mean for your financial support? What does that mean in your pro-life world? And so, and truly, it is an amazing, all the stories are amazing. Just get on their mailing list so you can see these families, you know, reaching and becoming families.
Amen.
Because of this opportunity. And so it's just and again, there's no better pro-life story. I mean, I'm thinking about a 5-year-old that can say, well, actually, I'm 25.
Yeah,
because
right. I was going to see you.
Actually, Mom, I'm older
ago.
Than you. So, no, you cannot ground me. You know
that possibility, believe it or not, could happen
these
days.
Yeah, I mean,
days.
that is we kind of laugh about that, but
yeah.
But the truth of that not only points to how many amazing things we've done with technology and science, but it also points to life beginning at conception.
It does.
And the fact that we save, these embryos are being saved, and then the ones that go all the way to birth, it's just an amazing picture of the gospel, an amazing picture of life. And so I would strongly encourage you to learn more about them and go to their website and just kind of walk through that. Talk to your friends about it. You may have people at your church that have gone through this.
Yeah, oh,
and
probably
have,
do.
And have babies. And, mm-hmm. and you're like, well, I didn't even know it existed. And there's a family in your church that two of their kids, one of their kids, three of their kids came through this process.
You either have a couple who may have gone through it, or I guarantee you, if you're at a decent-sized church, you have some families in their 20s and 30s, couples, who are going through infertility,
and
this could certainly be an option for them. We're not saying it absolutely is, but it's part of the picture. And yeah, Andrew, you mentioned the website. A lot of those stories that you talked about are on our website. So just go to embryodonation.org, and on the left-hand panel, click on the personal stories icon, and you can look at a lot of those
and
stories.
And look at those kids. That's the awesome part.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. I just look at my family, and when we found out we were pregnant with Gavin, our oldest, Aaron was maybe 4 or 5 weeks pregnant, and really early on in the process. And the reason we found out so early is because we were having issues getting pregnant. And so mm-hmm. She was being tested and going to the doctor early. And so, but when we found out, we weren't like, I didn't look at Aaron and say, well, I mean, the blob of cells, hopefully it turns into a baby.
We
cried together and were so happy that we were going to have the ability to be parents.
Mm.
And then after Gavin, when we got pregnant and had a miscarriage, at no point did I look at Aaron and go, well, it's not a big deal. It was just a blob. No, it was a life to us.
It was a
baby. And so those are things that we understand personally that we've been through.
Mm.
And so I also say that to say, when you're talking to these young families or young married couples at your church, be careful how you have those conversations. You know, don't say things like, well, when are y'all going to have one? And those, because maybe they've been trying and they just haven't let you know. And so maybe that's going to bring up some tough conversation or tough feelings. Or so just be aware.
That's the wrong thing to say. I'm glad you said, don't go to a young couple that doesn't have kids and has been together maybe for a couple of years. Oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't ever do it. Don't do it at a family gathering.
That's right.
Don't ever do it anywhere.
That's right. That's right. Celebrate life every opportunity you get. Why? Because you've been given life. And it's a great opportunity.
Amen.
And we're going to go out with the Eagles. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Our producer is on it today.
The greatest band in the history of the world, some would say.
Blending country and rock like you
so
talked
good.
About.
We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Lift your head.